This is Brian Ellison reporting live from the KCUR Sports Desk. There was a game last night. Someone won, someone lost. Best game ever, they say. And to tens of millions of Americans this morning, that is of no consequence whatsoever. Today on Central Standard, we talk about the only thing some people care about from last night's Super Bowl coverage, the ads. The hits, the duds, the mildly inappropriate, and the ones that never made it to the air. We'll step back and ask why this particular testament to excess matters so much to so many every year. And then we'll dive in, too. We've got experts on what worked and what didn't, and you can be the expert. Did that $3.5 million work for you? Super Bowl 47, commercials in review, on Central Standard, after the news. Yesterday's Super Bowl 47 was one for the ages, the nail-biting suspense of not knowing how things would work out, the memorable performances, the attempts that, while valiant, fell just a bit short, the triumphant return of long-suffering heroes. I'm talking, of course, about the commercials. This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and today, what has become a Central Standard tradition, a look back at the American advertising's marquee day each year, the Super Bowl. No concern here for the Ravens, just Clydesdales and chip-eating goats. No worries about 49ers, just the 49 or so minutes of commercials, clocking in at about $7 or $8 million a minute. Joining us on this year's panel to sort out the wins and losses on the airwaves, Dr. J. Anthony Snorgrass, who's an associate professor of advertising, branding, and strategic media at Avila University. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
John January is Senior Vice President and Executive Creative Director at Sullivan, Higdon & Sink. Welcome to you.
Happy Monday.
And Megan Stevens is a principal at Willoughby Design here in Kansas City. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you.
We, of course, want to hear from you throughout this hour. We want you to tell us your favorites and the ads that made you cringe as well. You can email us even now at centralstandard@kcur.org. Before we start digging into the specific ads from yesterday, and I know our listeners will have a lot of comments about that, I want to talk in general a little bit about this phenomenon that is Super Bowl advertising. When did this get to be this major American advertising event? Did it always start out that way?
Well, I was actually around for the very first Super Bowl, and I don't recall advertising being the primary premise of that Super Bowl.
Right.
I believe we even had a team in that Super Bowl,
yes.
So our focus was somewhere else. I'm not sure that I actually became interested in advertising until I became involved in the profession, which was years later.
But, you know, it's been a not all that recent a phenomenon that people watch and wait for particular ads this way.
Yeah, you know, for me, I actually think that a Super Bowl commercial set me on my professional path because I watched Apple 1984 live on the air, and I thought, wow, you know, I mean, and that is still one of the gold standards that all Super Bowl spots are sort of held to.
Right. This was, of course, in 1984, the George Orwell-esque sort of imagery that kicked off, really introduced America to the Apple, to the Macintosh, right?
Right. And I think it was one of the sort of seminal epic commercials that people now, we sort of hold everything up and we build all this hype around, well, that's the kind of spot we're hoping to see.
Yeah, Megan, is there something different about advertisement? You work with advertisers, you work on brand development. There's something different about planning an ad for the Super Bowl than just your everyday commercial, right?
It's very different. It's the biggest commercial that the world's going to see and everybody's watching. And so it's something that I think a lot of time and thought is spent on it, and it's just so exciting to see that creativity and advertising is also part of the biggest sporting event.
You know, we've been throwing around the financial number, and I realize that it actually is different for each ad, and there's different packages, so that's sort of an average of $3.5 or $4 million per 30-second spot. But I guess I wonder, how do you measure whether something like that is worth it? You know, obviously, these are all pretty well-known brands in the first place. Well, most of them are anyway. How can you tell if it's worth it to spend that much money on a Super Bowl ad?
I think the metrics of measuring advertising has changed over the years. It used to be metrics like resonance and relationship and recall. I think the measure now focuses more on conversation. Can you actually get your brand involved in the conversation for a period of time and retain that for sustenance purposes over different media and different programs? So it's not just that initial airing. What would we be talking about Monday morning? What would we be talking about next week?
Well, I was going to say, too, as outrageous as those numbers sound, it's still a great deal because the Super Bowl really is one of the last sort of really shared events where all eyes, you know, at least a third of the country are really glued right on in one place at one single time. So we used to have a lot more of those sort of shared experiences before everything was so fractured. So the Super Bowl really does provide that really large platform for brands. And it works. It still works. It still drives people to websites. It drives people into showrooms. So brands see what it does for them.
Go ahead, Megan.
I would just add that brand recognition is number one, and the Super Bowl is one of the last places where people are really paying attention to the advertisements, and we're not DVRing and we're not fast-forwarding through it. We're paying attention and we're talking about it, and I think that's really important.
You know, I also noticed that something that has happened over the last couple of years is that it isn't just about the ad that appears during that 30-second slot on TV. There are pre-campaigns, and there are trailers for the advertisements that are going to come out. How did this happen?
Well, I think advertising, traditional advertising in a sense, has almost taken a back seat to the social media advertising. And social media, particularly in this Super Bowl, I believe stepped up and said, we are equal and on par with the advertising that is traditionally purchased. And I agree with John that essentially the Super Bowl provides that one forum where traditional media, broadcast, television,
yeah,
brings people together.
So what are some examples of the ways social media sort of stepped into the breach or came out into a new light, so to speak, in this Super Bowl?
I thought that Oreo did a fabulous job with the You Can Still Dunk in the Dark that happened in the social media play. And kudos to their team.
If folks missed this, what happened after the power went out in the third quarter?
Their social media team put together an ad that aired on Twitter, and I think it was Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they were having an Instagram campaign.
Yeah, an Instagram campaign, and it popped up, and it was just a beautifully designed, very simple ad with an Oreo in the dark and milk, and it said, you can still dunk in the dark.
Right. Half the picture was in the light and half in the dark, just mm-hmm. like the Superdome.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think advertising people can geek out on that even more than maybe the general public, because that was concepted, designed, and approved and posted within 5 minutes. And so that's showing a brand that was really paying attention, that had all the pieces in place. And actually several brands took advantage of that blackout. Audi had a really fun sort of hijack of that situation where they said, well, we'll be sending some of our LED lights to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So they took good advantage of it too.
And Tide did as well, because they immediately responded. We may not be able to get the black out, but we can get your stain out.
There you go. And we'll talk about some of the ads that were sort of the main advertising that each of those brands offered during the game here in a little bit. Again, we want to invite our listeners to tweet at us. We're at KCUR. CST. You can also go to the KCUR Facebook page and let us know your favorite ads. We already have some response, and one of those responses was also something that all three of our guests, we asked them to give us a few of their favorite ads, the ones that they thought would have the biggest impact, and number one on all of their lists was an ad from Anheuser-Busch, which was titled Brotherhood. Now, of course, there's no words in this ad, which maybe is part of what makes it so powerful. But if as we're listening to the music, which was very moving, maybe our guests could sort of describe what viewers were seeing. Megan?
This was a beautiful example of storytelling from the beginning to the end. The casting was wonderful. The guy who was with the foal did a great job. It goes through the story to the end of the parade, and even ending with the participation call, which happened on social media to ask people to help name the baby horse. It made me cry. What can I say?
Well, and you're not the only one. In fact, I have to say, even just listening to the music now, having watched the ad a couple times yesterday, I actually just sort of got those chills. It was a very powerful ad.
Well, it's a testament, right, to what music can really do when it's used effectively. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to fib. I teared up on it. I love the spot. And it's a great brand icon, you know, and it's something that I think Budweiser does a great job of utilizing year after year.
Well, I certainly don't want my students to take this wrong, but yes, I have a softer side as well. And I did view the ad before it aired on the Super Bowl and had a hard time describing it to my wife as I showed it to her without tearing up myself.
Okay, so it's unanimous at the table. We all teared up, even the tough academic Dr. J. Well, you know, and I guess I wonder about this. So it was very powerful and very moving, but did it make you want to buy a beer? Is my question. What is the connection between this kind of emotional ad and the brand, the purpose?
Well, I think Super Bowl advertising, if you want to maybe equate it to another creative industry, is maybe a little bit more like couture fashion than it. I mean, that's a little, not all of them, obviously, but it's a little bit more couture than it is sort of everyday, ready to work sort of stuff.
Right.
So this is really about building brand and building brand recognition. And the Clydesdales are a classic icon. You know the brand immediately when you see those horses. And it evokes a feeling of real connection with that brand. And real warmth toward that brand. And so that's the strength of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what the stage of the Super Bowl can provide is a way to for people to and brands to really connect.
What do y'all think? Was this one of the great ads of all time? Is this a Apple 1984 ad? Is this an epic, or is this just another installment in the Clydesdale series?
I don't necessarily put it in the iconic class just yet, but time may tell. I don't think it meets the standard of the Mean Joe Green ad,
yep.
Nor does it meet the Apple ad, the iconic ones. But over time, we'll see. It is, I think, the best Clydesdale ad.
Really? Yes. Really? And that's and I guess that would be my other question, is the Clydesdales are an example of one of these sort of enduring icons. Could they ever jump the shark, if you will? I mean, is there such a thing as too many Clydesdale ads, or will they always work?
Again, time will tell. So far, so good. They're really keying in on nostalgia and Americana, and it's working so far.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. We're talking today about Super Bowl ads in review. Our guests are Dr. J. Anthony Snorgrass, John January, and Megan Stevens, all advertising experts, and they are reviewing with us some of the best and the worst of yesterday. We want you to join the conversation. Call us with your favorites or your least favorite at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. That's what Maureen did. And Maureen wrote, "Dodge Ram's God Made a Farmer was amazing." We actually can listen to that in just a moment. Set this up for us. This was an unusual ad. It was 2 minutes long.
Yeah, this actually utilizes a speech that Paul Harvey gave. Paul Harvey, the iconic radio broadcaster, that he gave at the Future Farmers of America National Convention, and I'm not sure of the year, but the speech has been around for quite some time. And so versus inventing anything, they just let his speech play against beautiful photography of farm life.
So imagine that beautiful photography and take a little listen to radio legend Paul Harvey.
And on the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, "I need a caretaker." So God made a farmer. God said, "I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board." So God made a farmer. God said, "I need somebody willing to sit up all night with a newborn colt and watch it die. Then dry his eyes and say, maybe next year. I need somebody who can shape an axe handle from a persimmon sprout, shoe a horse with a hunk of car tire, who can make harness out of hay, wire, feed sacks, and shoe scraps, who planting time and harvest season will finish his 40-hour week by Tuesday noon, and then painin' from tractor back put in another 72 hours. So God made a farmer."
And on it goes with this this lengthy and strangely powerful speech by Paul Harvey.
I'm just so glad that the cult he mentions was not the Budweiser Full.
No, right. And these were well separated, weren't they, with time. But you know, Paul Harvey's voice is part of what makes that ad, for sure. The imagery, which was very striking, is part of what makes it. Here again, doesn't have a lot to do with trucks.
My concern with the ad was it was a bit long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that the attention span in today's marketplace actually handles or receives well a two-minute spot. Particularly at the time of the game that it aired, there were many other things that were happening, and people probably viewed it as a point to go refresh themselves.
Yeah. Is that a concern? I mean, was the ad too long, Megan?
You know, it was long. It did keep my attention. Looking at it from a marketing to women point of view, I was impressed that women can be farmers too. I thought that was a nice touch. I also liked the cause tie-in with the FFA and the activation that happened later to raise money for the FFA for the views. So I thought that was nice.
We have a listener who found this to be a powerful ad, Jeannie in Overland Park. Jeannie, good morning.
Good morning. I thought it was an excellent ad. I really feel like the Midwest are farmers in Kansas, Iowa, Nebraska who work 18 hours a day and go to sleep and get up and do it all over again and can never go on vacation because nobody can take care of their animals. I thought that was really wonderful. And I think, wasn't the person or the group that supported it Dodge?
Yes, it was a Dodge Ram commercial.
Dodge Ram commercial. And that point came across very clear to me that it was a Dodge Ram commercial. And my thinking about Dodge, which is usually a middle-priced workhorse car, I thought that was very appropriate for them.
So was that your favorite ad of the Super Bowl?
It was my favorite because I really felt that it honored the Midwest.
Jeannie, thank you so much for calling in today.
And I didn't think it was too long, and my attention span is long enough.
Well, I appreciate that. There you go, Dr.
Thank
J.
You.
There's an opposing view. You know, both of these ads that we've mentioned, the Budweiser ad and the Dodge Ram ad, were sort of in that same category of sort of they reach out to pull the heartstrings. And that's sort of one of the major categories, I think, of Super Bowl ads that I recall.
It's one of the tricks that we use to try to garner people's attention. The thing I'll say about the Ram spot, I have to agree, I had it, and the party I was at, everyone had a really visceral reaction to it, and it was probably the only spot of the night where the entire party, all the talking went down to nothing and everybody listened. So from that angle, it was really, really effective.
That's actually what happened at my house too. It seemed to sort of stopped everything and got your attention, made you watch.
I think there may be a difference in how that was read. I actually polled several parties that were going on, as well as had my students give me feedback. I'm not sure that 18 to 30 for demo actually recognizes Paul Harvey's voice and can associate with him the way we may do. And I think that had a lot to do with maybe the skepticism that was moving away from it.
There's one other ad that I think was in this category that a lot of people have mentioned as being very powerful for them, and that was the also sponsored by a Chrysler division, and that's the ad for Jeep. Let's take a little bit of a listen to that.
There will be a seat left open, a light left on, a favorite dinner waiting, a warm bed made. There will be walks to take, swings to push, and baths to give.
And as Oprah continues her narration, talk a little bit about what folks are seeing in this ad. This is a story of soldiers coming home, right?
It's just seeing soldiers in every walk of life. The fact that they're missing being home with their offspring, their families, their jobs, their coworkers. And the Jeep spot actually resonates from the standpoint of actually welcoming them home. Now, as an owner of three Jeeps, this one probably resonated much more with me than did the Dodge Ram.
Okay, this is a very patriotic ad too. The advertiser is trying to associate themselves with the idea of support for America, not just with an emotional tug at the heart, right?
I think some people could have a cynical response to it. The thing about the Jeep brand, though, it's so associated with soldiers that I for me personally, I felt like they had the license to sort of go here. It didn't cross that line of cynicism for me personally, because of the history that Jeep has with the military.
Yeah, does it? I mean. I did read a couple folks who found it manipulative. That's the word that they use sometimes, emotionally manipulative. Do you feel like that's a charge that can be leveled at Super Bowl ads, or is that just part of the game?
I wouldn't use the term manipulative, but advertising certainly seeks influence.
Mm-hmm. There are other ads probably that tug at the heartstrings in different ways, but of course that is not what every ad tries to do, is it? Some ads try to appeal to a different part of who we are. What did you think was the funniest ad of this year's Super Bowl? And, of course, invite our listeners to be part of that conversation, too, at centralstandard@kcur.org or to call us at 816-235-2888. Your vote for funniest ad of the Super Bowl. Megan?
I really liked Tide the Miracle Stain. I thought they did a nice nod to female fans.
So tell us, set up for us what happened in the Tide ad.
Joe Montana appears as a stain, a Jesus-like stain, and they are celebrating this stain, and I think the woman in the end gets her way with her, the team she's rooting for.
We don't have an audio clip of that, but the stain appears in the image of the great sainted Joe Montana in salsa on a 49ers jersey. Play out what happens for that in the rest of the ad, John.
Well, and you know, as Megan said, it becomes quite an icon, quite a celebrated icon, and the spouse washes the stain out with Tide because she's a Ravens fan.
Right.
So it was a really great use of comedy, and again, for non-advertising people, it was produced. You know, after they determined which two teams were going to be in the bowl, so there was that to kind of marvel at as well, because those are not small productions.
Dr. J,
I think that's an example of an ad that was actually produced for the Super Bowl, specifically for the teams, not an ad that just happened to run on the Super Bowl. So I give them credit, much credit for that.
There were other funny ads that played. I've talked to folks, including groups of teenagers, who among other things, liked the Doritos ads that played. But one that maybe didn't get as much attention, it came a little bit later in the game, was an ad for Speedstick set in a laundromat. Let's take a little listen to this ad for Speedstick from yesterday.
I've been waiting for the dryer for like forever. That's it. I'm just going to unload their clothes. I don't care if they get wrinkled.
What are you doing?
And now I look like a huge perv.
Sweating on the inside? Handle it on the outside with Speedstick Power.
I was just going to fold your clothes for you so they wouldn't get wrinkled.
That's so sweet of you.
I fold your panties any day.
What?
What?
Speedstick. Don't sweat it. Handle it.
So, yes. So tweet your... He's holding her pair of panties as she walks up, and... you're hearing his inner narration there of what's happening to him. What's going on in this ad, Megan?
I thought this was an interesting one, and it kind of had me in the beginning. But I'd fold your panties any day. I understand that they're trying to go for shock value, but that was a little over the top for me.
Okay. Other reactions from our professionals in the world of advertising? Doc J?
Essentially, my perspective on the ad was, if you're going to close the sale, don't talk too long. The last line killed the deal. Didn't need to say that.
And John, what do you think?
Well, I think in the rush and the crush of Super Bowl ad watching, that was one that just didn't even register with me.
We have a couple other votes on our phone lines at 816-235-2888. Anne in KCK, what was your favorite ad in yesterday's Super Bowl? Anne, are you still with us? Apparently she is not. How about Richard in Kansas City, Missouri?
Hi. My favorite one was kind of early on. It was turned out to be a Coke commercial, and it was used a Supertramp song. And they had different spots from, I guess, from closed-circuit cameras showing people helping each other out, I think, and stuff like that.
Yeah, they were hidden surveillance cameras catching people doing nice things.
Yeah, random acts of kindness and just having fun. And I thought that was pretty cool because it kind of combined, you know, a song of my era that I really like, along with stuff that isn't fake and manipulated. I like the Budweiser commercial. I mean, I know that was beautifully done, but from a visual standpoint, and I'm sure they spent a lot of money on it and getting the Fleetwood Mac song to rights to use that, but it's just corny. You know, it's just over the top. You were talking about the Paul Harvey one. I thought that was good because it was real. You know, that's really the truth, and it's not just to sell a product. But I really liked that Supertramp, and I thought that hit the right note.
Stay on the line, Richard. I wonder if our guests have some reaction to that ad, which was not one of the more high-profile ads, really, John.
Well, I love that spot. And, in fact, there's a longer-form version of it online that's even better. So if you like that, I'd encourage you to go take a look at it. It didn't make my list only because it's not exactly new. It's been around for a few months.
But thank you for mentioning it, Richard. I really appreciate your calling in. Megan, is that unusual for an ad that's not new to appear during the Super Bowl?
You know, it happens, and I think with Coke it worked out well because it's just so on brand and it's a beautiful ad, and you get it. I thought it was nicely done.
Yeah, let's talk to one more caller as we talk about favorite ads and about ads that made us laugh. William in Independence. Good morning.
Good morning.
What was your favorite ad yesterday?
Well, my favorite ad overall, I think, would be the Taco Bell one.
Ah, the Taco Bell ad. What was so good about this Taco Bell ad for you?
Well, I mean, the fact that it's the generation and the age group that I come from, you know, it shows them sneaking out of the nursing home and pretty much being rowdy and kind of out of control like you were back in the day, you know, when we were younger.
When you were younger. All right. Well, let's take a listen to that music at least, although we'll have to rely on our imagination for what was happening in this ad. Here's last night's Taco Bell ad.
Good night, Mr. Goldblatt.
Good night.
So Mr. Goldblatt has jumped out of bed after the nurse has left his room into a car with some of his friends, and they're now hitting all the popular night spots in town.
I think the ad actually represents the teen in all of us. It was a little too close to home for me to put it on my best list, but it's probably deep in my dream somewhere. That's what I would like to do.
Now, at this point in the ad, they've been skinny dipping. Now they're out on a dance floor. There's soap suds on the dance floor. It's quite a scene. Part of what this ad does is it plays against stereotype, right? That we're supposed to think of older people as boring or infirm, and instead we're asked to laugh at how they are not that way, right?
And the Taco Bell, it becomes the hangout. That is where the teens love to hang late at night, and they have some interesting hours. And I particularly like the part where the police officers drive by and give them that look of disdain.
Right. Well, one of them is passed out on the hood of the car, and it's quite an ad. What did you guys think of it? Was it effective?
I thought it was very effective. I think that not all ads have to be sexy or edgy or shocking. It was just plain fun. I thought it resonated with everybody in our room.
Well, let's take a little break. This is a lot of fun talking about these ads. We'll continue the conversation of some of the best and maybe some of the worst, some of the ones that really did not connect, that were $3 or $4 or $8 million not well spent yesterday. We hope you'll join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888, 235-2888. You can also still email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. You're listening to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Yesterday was the Super Bowl, and for many, it was the greatest day on American television, not because of the football, but because of the advertising. We're talking today with three experts on advertising who are helping us analyze what was good and what was not about yesterday's ads. Dr. J. Anthony Snorgrass of Avila University, John January of Sullivan Higdon Sink, and Megan Stevens of Willoughby Design are with us. We hope you are also tracking with us and thinking about your favorites. Call us at 816-235-2888. 888. You know, every year, some of the ads that air during the Super Bowl attract a certain level of controversy, either because they are deemed by some to be insensitive in one way or another, or because they're deliberately pushing the envelope of what is considered appropriate. One of the serial offenders, if you will, of questionable appropriateness in many people's minds has been GoDaddy or GoDaddy.com. What has been sort of the arc of advertising that GoDaddy has tried to use during the Super Bowl over the years?
I think the arc of GoDaddy has pretty much been sex and more sex. From the early ads in the courtroom, there was always the teaser with the beautiful woman in front of older guys who, I think one of them had a heart attack. They moved from there and went to Nana Kirkpatrick and her involvement. And I think where they are now is still trying to push that envelope, but slightly in a different way without the celebrity side.
Right. I mean, I think of some of those earlier ads that actually had, you know, portions of the screen blocked out with the word censored. For the full ad, go to our website. Nothing like that this year, and yet still maybe questionable in a different way. Megan?
I think they've done a good job of being memorable, and that's what they're all about. When you go to buy an URL, what do you remember? You remember GoDaddy.com. And even though sometimes they're offensive, I've got to say it hasn't made me want to go and change who I buy my URLs from.
So I want to play one of these ads, and I should preface this ad for GoDaddy with saying that almost every person at this table ranked it as one of their least favorite ads, and the USA Today ad meter rating ranked this in the very bottom group of ads. This, by all measures, might be one of the worst ads during the Super Bowl, and yet I can't stop thinking about it. Here's an ad for GoDaddy.
There are two sides to GoDaddy. There's the sexy side represented by Bar Raffaelli, and the smart side that creates a killer website for your small business represented by Walter. Together, they're perfect.
And if you listen closely, you can hear the sound of supermodel Bar Raffaelli and Walter, who is a stereotypical nerdish figure, being making out in a very sloppy and audible fashion in that ad. Really just awful, plainly an awful advertisement, except I can't stop thinking about it.
I think there we begin to view the difference between ad popularity and ad effectiveness, because there are two ways to win in Super Bowl advertising. Possibly come up with one of the worst ads ever, because we will remember it and we'll talk about it, and also come up with one of the best. I think that strategic, if it was a conscious decision, has played well for them.
John?
Well, I was just going to say I was sort of, you know, having an Oedipus moment, wanting to poke my eyes out.
Right.
You know, it's like, I can't unsee it because it was totally there. But I agree with the doctor in the sense that, you know, there's bad advertising that works and there's good advertising that works. And I'd rather just be associated with the latter.
I will say that GoDaddy got an emotional reaction out of me. It was disgust, but it was emotional.
This was, of course, not their only ad. They also had the ad featuring Danica Patrick piloting an airplane, which for once actually seemed to have something to do with their product, with the idea that you should get your product online using their service.
But I think the other kissing ad had aired first. So by that time, we'd already had our impression of GoDaddy for this Super Bowl.
Right. So we have a caller who had another least favorite ad and one of those that got some pre-Super Bowl buzz in a negative way. Let's talk to Carrie in Kansas City, Missouri. Carrie, what was the ad that that raised some concern for you?
It was the Volkswagen commercial where the people from Minnesota, the guy was talking in the Jamaican patois.
Yes. So stay with us, Carrie. Let's just take a listen to a little bit of that ad. And please know that the person who you're hearing most from in this ad is a very white, very Minnesotan-looking man.
I hate Mondays.
Yeah, they're the worst.
No worries, man. Everything will be all right.
Yeah, man.
Oh, don't fret me, brother. Sticky bun comes soon. Yeah. Wicked coffee, Mr. Jim. Julia, turn the frown the other way around.
Hey, Dave. You're from Minnesota, right?
Yes, I. The land of 10,000 lakes.
the Gopher State.
So in conclusion, things are pretty dismal.
You know what this room needs? A smile. Who wanna come with I?
Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
You guys are 3 minutes late.
Don't be no cloud on a sunny day.
Yeah, chill, Winston.
Sir?
Respect, boss man.
Okay, so Carrie from Kansas City, what's the problem? What didn't you like about that ad?
I don't get the connection between people, a very obviously white male person, and his coworkers, you know, smoking the ganja and getting happy in Volkswagen.
Okay, so this ad just didn't work for you, huh, Carrie?
It was silly, and the best part of it for me was the Partridge Family song.
All right. Well, there's at least some support for the music in the ad. Thanks so much for calling in, Carrie.
Yeah, and my favorite was the Tide commercial with Joe Montana.
Yes.
I just loved that one.
Very good. We appreciate your calling in, Carrie. So let me ask my guests. This is one of those, there's always an ad that seems to raise for some folks a question of sensitivity, cultural sensitivity. Did this one cross the line, you think?
I believe the ad had originally been criticized as actually being racist at one point by many. And there have been several stories online that attacked the ad that way. Now, I may have been the only panelist that included this ad in my top three. It was number three. I am an African-American. I was not offended. However, there were some opportunities that they could have addressed inclusiveness, not only from a racial standpoint, but also from a gender standpoint. The boardroom was full of men. No women were there. And I think it plays a lot better on the radio when you don't actually see the faces.
Well, that's interesting for the only ad today, perhaps, that actually plays better on the radio. I guess I'm curious. This ad, at the very least, flirts with insensitivity or with racism. Why would a Super Bowl ad even get close to that line? This is a pretty high profile. Are they doing it on purpose?
They tested that spot. Volkswagen says they tested the spot really extensively and received, you know, a lot of positive feedback. It's how they chose to actually run it. And in fact, they had another spot and they still chose to run this. In fact, they even claimed that they actually tested it with Jamaicans, and Jamaicans love the spot. I'm a huge fan of VW advertising in general. One of my very favorite Super Bowl ads of all time was the Vader spot that they did with the small Darth Vader 2 years ago. It's one of my very favorite. Now I'm a Star Wars geek, so I'll go ahead and admit to that. But this ad just, to me, wasn't as funny as that.
Another ad that raised some questions, at least for you, Megan, that you mentioned, was the ad for Best Buy. We're going to listen to a little bit of this. What's happening in this ad?
Well, we have a female shopper, and granted, she's pretty funny, and she's going around and asking lots of questions. What disappointed me is that they were just pretty stupid and stereotypical in some points, and the commentary on the 50 Shades of Grey was off-putting.
Here's Amy Poehler as that female shopper in this Best Buy ad.
Hi, may I answer any questions?
What the heck's the difference between all these phones?
What's LTE? Is it contagious?
Which one fits my face?
Can I use a dongle with this?
Does it make you uncomfortable when I use the word dongle?
Are these noise canceling?
So what makes a smart TV so smart?
You don't make commission on anything?
Anything.
You want to unbutton your shirt a little bit?
What's the cloud? Where is the cloud?
Are we in the cloud now?
Will this one read 50 Shades of Grey to me in a sexy voice?
No.
Will you?
All right.
Thank
wearing noise-canceling headphones there at the end. So Megan crosses the line?
Just a little bit. You know, I found the humor in it, but at the end when I stopped to think about it, I thought, you know, women are a little smarter than that.
Well, it's especially interesting given that Amy Poehler is probably most associated with a character who is the opposite of sort of stuck in some sort of gender stereotype of a woman who doesn't know her way around an electronics shop.
Exactly, and that's the one thing that saved it.
Yeah. Any other reactions to that ad?
No.
Yeah. It's all my guests are going to say about that. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about Super Bowl ads, your favorites and your least favorites. Let me talk to Dan in Leawood. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I found myself torn between two ads and mildly offended by one. First, the curious overt use of religion with Dodge, and secondly, the lack of attention for Lincoln. Having grown up in a sea of farmers, coincidentally in the same town as your panelist, John, I could certainly identify with Paul Harvey and the love of Dodge trucks. On the other hand, I'm pining for the new Lincoln MKZ, and I found myself asking, what would Jesus drive? And relative to the GoDaddy ad, it certainly would be her Indy car.
Ah, very, very good. So you think that are you suggesting, Dan, that the sort of religious undertone of the Paul Harvey ad for Dodge was off-putting?
Just in that it's not utilized often, and I was surprised at how much they leaned on it.
Okay, Dan, appreciate your calling in. Do we concur that there was sort of a religious content there? And, of course, is that intentional?
I think it was intentional. I believe the very first photograph that was shown in the spot was a rural church that prominently showed the cross.
Yeah, I think that's right. The another ad that got a little bit of negative attention, especially before the Super Bowl, actually, was an ad for Coke that featured a race. And it was a race which was silly in premise and in practice, featuring a race between the Cowboys and Showgirls and Badlanders, sort of a motorcycle gang. There was a social media tie-in where folks could vote for who they thought should win the race. But one of the early shots in the ad is of a gentleman in Middle Eastern dress trying to pull a camel across the desert, who's being beat by all of these other racers, and some objected to the stereotypical presentation of a Middle Eastern person in that way.
And not only the representation of the Middle Eastern, I think the early era was not one of the options that one could pick to actually win.
You
race.
Couldn't vote for him.
You could
right.
not vote for him. I think that was a mistake strategically on the front end.
Yeah. Some other comments coming in from Twitter. Taylor tweeted at KCURCST, whether or not I keep thinking about it, the GoDaddy ad doesn't make me want to buy their products at all. Opposite, in fact. And a comment from Annie on Facebook, who wants to reaffirm, contrary to those who might not have appreciated the Dodge Ram ad, she says, it brought me to tears. I want to talk for a moment about a few ads that didn't air, that didn't make it to the airwaves, that there was talk about ahead of time, but didn't actually get selected. One of those was for a company called SodaStream, that they did have one ad that made it to the air, but one didn't make it, that included a reference to Coke and Pepsi. Tell us about that, John.
Well, it was the spot showed basically a Coke delivery guy and a Pepsi delivery guy sort of racing to get their product into a store. And then, similar to the ad that they aired, somebody starts using a SodaStream somewhere and all their bottles just sort of vaporize and go away.
Yeah, so just to reinforce for me and for our listeners, what is SodaStream? What is the product?
SodaStream is a product that you can use to make your own soda at home.
Okay, so let's take a listen to the ad that did air for SodaStream. And that's the sound of the bottles bursting because SodaStream apparently has been used instead of buying the prepackaged pot.
With SodaStream, we could have saved 500 million bottles on game day alone. If you love the bubbles, set them free.
If you love the bubbles, set them free. Do these kind of ads work in your view as advertising professionals and experts?
My thought is the ad that did not air would have worked. I actually miss the Pepsi and Coke delivery guys battling it out, and that would have been the introduction of a third entity into that conversation.
Is there an official word on why that ad wasn't allowed? Did Coke and Pepsi, in fact, pressure the network not to air it?
I don't know that for a fact. I know that CBS was uncomfortable airing it because Coke and Pepsi have been such good customers, good clients, and spend so much money. But, you know, I think that's they're big boys. They can handle that. And so if that's the real reason, I think that's unfair. And I agree. I would have rather seen that spot.
Let's talk to Margaret in Kansas City. Margaret, welcome to Central Standard.
Turn it off.
Margaret, are you listening on the phone there?
I am here.
Okay, tell us what your favorite was.
It was my least favorite.
Okay.
And my least favorite was the Oreo commercial. And I was deeply offended because of the amount of violence that erupted over the discussion of whether you eat the creamy inside or the outside. And the reason for that is because we are in such an era of extreme violence, and I believe in a little peaceful mediation would have been much more appropriate to promote. And at least they didn't come out with guns.
Okay. Well, in fact, Margaret, hang on with us for a second. Let's take a little bit of a listen. This is an ad for Oreo about the battle here is between cookie and cream.
I've always preferred the cream bar of an Oreo. That's
They're
crazy.
In a library, you should know.
Bar. Cream. Cookie. Cream. Cookie. Cream. Cookie. Cream.
And so what's happening is that chaos is breaking out in this library, which was two guys arguing across the table from each other. Bookshelves are falling. Fires have started. A police car has just plunged into the side of the library. So, Margaret, you think that was too violent?
Yeah, I get the irony that they're all whispering over it in the library. Okay, I get it. But still, to resort to fighting and violence over a cookie, what message are you trying to get? To what demographic? Who's going to watch the Oreo commercial and go, oh, yeah, well, let me go fight with you about a cookie because I've got nothing else to fight about.
Margaret, thanks so much for the call. I wonder for our experts here at the table, does the context of an ad makes a big difference, right? And Margaret mentioned that, you know, we live in a time where there is a lot of violence. There have been recent incidents. Does an advertiser have a responsibility to be sensitive to those kinds of issues?
Sure, and I understand the point that she's making too. It was slapstick enough and cartoonish enough to me that provided enough comedic distance that I didn't feel that way. And it was actually one of the spots that made me laugh out loud. I like the notion of whispering, which also that approach to it again sort of softened it and took it more to the, you know. Slapstick parody kind of zone. So that was okay for me. But I think it brings up a good point in that the kind of stuff that a stand-up comedian might say, nobody would think twice about, the kind of thing that you might see in a movie, no one would think twice about. If you put it in an ad, because advertising is sponsored communication, people don't give it that leeway to necessarily be art. So it doesn't really get all the freedom to make a comment on stuff, and so people do, you know, have really strong reactions. It's kind of hard to make an ad, honestly, that doesn't kind of get somebody tipped over an edge somewhere.
Some of the ads that got panned most widely were also Anheuser-Busch ads, interestingly, as much as the Clydesdale ads were well-received. There was an ad for Beck's Sapphire beer, which had a fish singing I'll quote Rachel on Facebook. She says, the one with the fish singing "No Diggity" was bafflingly hilarious. They win for being most memorable in my book. I laugh every time I think about it, even though I still don't get it. And then what some of you mentioned were the other Anheuser-Busch ads for Black Crown beer. Let's take a listen to a little bit of one of those. Supermodel striding across the bar here.
The loud. The savvy. The famous. It took all of us to taste and choose the new Budweiser Black Crown. Our kind of beer. A golden amber lager to match our night. The new smooth
our
and
kind
distinctive
of beer. The
Budweiser
loud.
Black Crown.
The savvy. I don't even remember.
And the goth, apparently.
Yeah. What was going on in this ad? None of you seem to like
goth,
it very much.
Goth beer drinking was going on. That's kind of all I could see. I think Budweiser. I miss some of the slapstick Bud Light stuff as juvenile as some of it was. Some of it, you know, you could always sort of count on them to really kind of
the Bud Bowl,
right? Just sort of keep it light. And you know, the whole new hip cool, you know. Bud thing, it's like, nah, let's let it be what it is.
Dr. J. Anthony Snorgrass, you said this was wasted money.
It was wasted money not only was the execution, I think, has been overused by several other alcoholic beverage companies, particularly on the vodka side. Mm-hmm. The treatment of the Addis Party had already been exhausted, so it's pretty much old news. And the beer marketplace is pretty crowded right now. So I don't think another choice, an introduction of a new choice, is the right move.
We have a couple minutes left here, and I want to give just a mention to local ads. We don't think of local ads as being a big part of the Super Bowl lineup, but there were a few of them, and I was sort of struck at how short some of them were. In fact, there were a number of, I believe they were 3-second ads. They might have been five, but for a local plumber and somewhere that will repair your iPhone, an ad that had pretty low production values, it seemed. Is this I have no idea what is charged for a local ad during the Super Bowl, but is it a profitable investment for a company?
I'm not sure exactly what the charges are. In my ad executive days, yes, we had a couple of spots that actually ran during the Super Bowl here locally. The challenge, though, particularly on the 3-second ads. Last year we had a 1-second spot. And I think the success of that and the aftermarketing that occurred has encouraged others to follow that same.
What was the product in the 1-second?
I don't remember.
Spot.
See, it all didn't right.
work. Okay, it didn't work on you.
It didn't work, but it was one. I remember the 1-second. Okay.
Right. I mean, the ad that I'm thinking of for mission repair, so break someone's iPhone. They throw a football, knock the iPhone out of the hand, needs to be broken. I remember the ad. I don't know that I would remember where to go to get my iPhone fixed.
It came and went really quickly, and I thought, yeah, that's good to know about, and then didn't really think more about it.
Yeah. There was a longer ad in the postgame for Park University, so a longer full-length ad, but it was in the postgame broadcast. Of course, I should have mentioned also there was an ad for Google Fiber. That's an ad that has aired previously, but made use of local talent, featured a fictional player for Wyandotte High School basketball. Yeah. So lots more that we could have explored, but this has been a very full hour with very interesting stuff. Dr. J. Anthony Snorgrass is a professor of advertising at Avila University. John January is a local creative director at Sullivan Higdon Sink, and Megan Stevens, a principal at Willoughby Design. Thank you all for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
This tradition perhaps will continue next year, but you can find our previous shows as well as our podcasts and a lot more at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow for an investigation into Kansas City homelessness and also a look at the musical Hair. Stay tuned now for Up to Date. They're coming up with a community eulogy of Adele Hall, who passed away last week, and also a look back on American sniper Chris Kyle. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Brian Ellison. And this is Central Standard on KCUR.